Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network.
The Florida legislature is about halfway through its 12-week session, and since it is run by Republicans, there's seemingly no limit to their atrocious bills.
You are about to enter the arena of real news and factual commentary on the Voice of Reason here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Now, here are your hosts for today's program, Ed Golly and Joe Reinhart.
And Joe, it seems like the Republicans are resorting to the tactic of creating the problem so that they can deliver the solution even when there's no problem there. The Republicans, who have a supermajority in the legislature of Florida, are attempting to introduce a bill that would teach children as young as kindergarten age about what they call the threat of communism. And a summary of the bill says children will be taught about the history of communism in the U.S., atrocities committed in foreign countries under communism, and the increasing threat of communism in the 20th century to the United States and our allies. Okay, we're supposed to all agree that, oh yeah, communism is what we fought against after the Second World War, right? And we even had an American Communist Party that had about, what, 20 members or so. But now they're telling us, oh, this is something that's going to take over the world. And yet the Republicans in the U.S. Congress are the very party that's backing down on the advance of communism in Eastern Europe, and saying that let's just follow Trump's lead and bail out of NATO and let communism spread wherever it goes throughout Europe. So if they're so afraid of it, why aren't they defending the world against it? A Victims of Communism Day was signed into law in 2022 to be observed in schools on November 7th each year, along with at least 45 minutes of instruction for high school students on the same day. And the text of the bill proposes that children be taught about what's called, quote, the philosophy and lineages of communist thought. Well, I wonder how objective that's going to be, because when we really look at how Marxism evolved in Western Europe, it was in response to the incredible disparity of wealth and the class separation that occurred all through the European countries. Right?
And which is happening again.
Here, yeah, exactly, with our tax laws. And Marxism didn't conceive of a dictatorial governance like you have in North Korea or Russia or China or Cuba. They rather thought that the government would eventually simply die away when this economic system was introduced that would level the playing field and give the workers more reward financially for all the work they were doing building the country, right?
It seemed to be the ineluctable end result of being able to use the power of the masses to produce or not produce in order to bring about changes in government. This has happened, going back to the beginning. However, communism, as it exists, at least as an ideology, has never actually existed as a political system or as an economic system, which it really is an economic system. The political system just is an offshoot of that. But it's never existed in the form that it was intended to be created. In fact, the minute it was born, we started going to war to stop it, and the founders started killing each other, so it never went well.
Yeah, so they're associating atrocities of dictators who operated in communist nations with this economic system. So it's not going to be objective. And it leads me to wonder what they're saying is one of the representatives in our state government named Alina Garcia says it's never too early to teach our children the atrocities of communism, adding, God forbid if this country ever falls into the hands of communism. Okay, I think, you know, we don't want to live under a communist system where, capitalism is pretty firmly entrenched in the American culture.
Keep in mind that there was a successful communist country, Peru, which was democratically elected. We had their president, Allende, assassinated and virtually helped to overthrow it. So even when it was successful or could be successful, communism still exists in Cuba in spite of being boycotted for half a century or more.
And see,
I'm not endorsing communism. I'm just pointing out that what we know about it and how we see it functioning is nothing like what it should have been.
But by connecting it to dictators, because it becomes a one-party system, they're also starting to say now that the Democratic Party really wants to convert our country to communism. So they're trying to, I think, associate communism with the Democratic Party to indoctrinate kids as early as kindergarten to be Republicans because they can't sell their message otherwise.
Well, and to offset the very real fact that the Republican Party is drifting very heavily towards fascism. And if you want to be a fascist, then you have to make sure that you have somebody to criticize to take the heat.
And steering our country in the direction of the exact economic system that actually gave birth to Marxism, which is a disparity of wealth, giving the rich more and more money through tax breaks. And we tax labor, not wealth, in this country, so that the people who are keeping the country running, producing things, picking up your garbage, are paying, 22% tax rate, while the billionaires are down to about a 3.5% tax rate because they have ways to steer around income tax. And so they're getting more and more wealth, and the difference between what the top 0.1% has and the lower 50% has is greater than it was when communism was conceived.
In less enlightened times, this was called robbery.
Robber barons, right? Yeah, and they didn't have the level of wealth relative to the working people that is existent now in our own country. And I wonder if they're going to introduce any legislation to teach the atrocities of capitalism, like, for example, the genocide of the native people. Can you blame that on capitalism? Slavery. Can you blame that on capitalism? 4 million people. The deal is you do all the work, Joe, and I get all the money. How's that sound? That's capitalism in its finest hour, right? We had it here for half the time we've been a nation. And what about the exploitation of immigrant labor? That's almost a fundamental element of capitalism, exploiting the labor force for the wealth of the top handful of people who end up owning through monopolies like Rockefeller did, either the oil companies or the steel companies or the railroads or the shipping companies or the banks or any of those institutions, so that they're hoarding all the money and the working people get less and less. That's exactly what's happening now. Are they going to teach these kindergartens about that as if they can absorb these concepts? That's absurd. They can't. They're not old enough to start contemplating what this is all about. I remember when I took a class in high school called PAD. Lou Filippello was the teacher, and he explained these differences, alluding that if a guy's working in a shoe factory and makes a pair of shoes one day, the cost of the shoes is more than he got paid to make the shoes. And so he says, is that a fair way to treat labor? Well, of course it is, because the guy that made the shoes didn't come up with the factory. He didn't come up with all the materials to make them and the raw materials and the equipment to make them. He didn't market the shoes. If the shoes don't sell, he doesn't take a loss, and so on. And so, but fundamentally, that was the issue, is that the workers aren't getting paid a fair wage relative to what they're producing. And so that's how these systems evolved, but they ended up evolving universally into single-party dictatorships instead of the kind of economic system that they were designed to be. Is there, and now, this guy, a representative from the Christian Family Coalition of Florida, a guy named John Labrioli, said the American equivalent of communism was cultural Marxism. And he claims this, quote, "It's been manifested in things like the critical race theory, using the victim-oppressor narratives as well as the sexual orientation agendas of the LGBT movement, using things like gender identity." The Christian Family Coalition says it is a human rights and social justice advocacy organization fighting for faith, family, and freedom. Faith and freedom are contradictory.
The freedom to do exactly as you're told.
Yeah. I mean, freedom of thought doesn't exist if you have faith, because the directives are there for what to think and how to live. And one is not supposed to live outside the directives if faith is the guiding principle of it. And, you know, Western Europe had a time when it was totally dominated by Christian faith and Christian values, and we called that
the Dark Ages.
Appropriately, right? Because there were no advances in science or education.
There were advances in instruments,
liberties,
in the variety and number and the facility of instruments of torture.
Exactly. And then I think this other thing that I saw about it is that the Senate is proposing a similar bill here in Florida. And in the original bill text, it said, quote, "The Third Reich of Nazi Germany," unquote, "was included as one of the foreign communist movements." And then they amended that text to replace it by Marxism-Leninism and the Russian Revolution in 1917. That just shows they don't know what they're talking about, because the Reich was totally opposed to communism. And they threw the communists in concentration camp.
Hitler thought that the U.S. might be an ally of Germany because he wanted to invade Russia, and he was anti-communist, and so was the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And it was thought that the communists would be able to control Hitler while he would be rounding up the communists, and then they'd be rid of all of them, and it just didn't quite work out that way. Also, the first attempt at communism took place right here on American soil in the colony at Jamestown, when the logic was, we'll all put things into a common warehouse, whether it's food or firewood or blankets or whatever, and so you go out and produce whatever you can and put it in the warehouse and then take out of it whatever you need. They damn near starved to death. Because nobody was putting anything in, just taking out.
The immediate result of that type of system, and I haven't lived in one myself, but the examples I have seen are that in very short order, an endless bickering begins about, well, you're not doing your mm-hmm. share, or you're taking more than your share, or some combinations of the variations of the above. And that, of course, is the beginning of the end.
Right. And I think the biggest irony with the Christians endorsing this is if there was ever an economic system that most closely represented the so-called values of the alleged Jesus, it would be a communist economic system.
Sell all that thou hast and give it to the poor. Anybody who needs any help selling all that thou hast, I'm available.
Yeah. What's the adage about it's more difficult for the camel to pass through the eye
of a needle than for a rich man to go to heaven?
Yeah. I mean, what is that message? You're not supposed to accrue massive amounts of wealth. You're supposed to use that wealth to help the
poor. The apologist's workaround to that problem is that the eye of the needle supposedly was a rock formation somewhere in the Arabic desert, and that camels had difficulty negotiating their way through
okay.
that.
Okay.
But I am I have nothing to say as to the veracity of that explanation or, or the former or the example that it tries to contradict.
Yeah, but if the fundamental values of Christianity are supposed to be using wealth to help poor people, then they're turning around and saying, oh, this is a terrible thing that we don't ever want in our country.
Sell all that thou hast is pretty clear. There's no workaround for that like there is with the rock formation.
They must not talk about that much in the lectures in the church when the when Joel Osteen is up there passing the hat, becoming a multimillionaire, selling superstition. Joe, let's talk about the Alabama Supreme Court, because this should really get jaw-dropping attention of all Americans, and it's it is what has been triggered by the whole Dobbs decision. By the Supreme Court judges that Donald Trump put on the court, that Leonard Leo handed him over, and who were on that court for the specific reason of overturning Roe and oppressing women. And here it goes. The Alabama Supreme Court has ruled that frozen embryos can be considered children under state law. And it is already having incredibly sweeping implications for fertility treatments in Alabama. Already, overnight.
The university has quit doing IVF pending some sort of clarification, because the ruling doesn't seem to consider in the least the collateral damage, the fact that keeping a...
An embryo
alive is kind of an iffy process, and they go through a freezing and a warming periods, and there may be some women or couples may have multiples, and they may or may not want to be inseminated with half a dozen embryos at the same time. They only want one, and so now they're all looking at being potentially charged as murderers. I'd be very uncomfortable in that situation.
Let's look at some of the language, Joe. Justice J. Mitchell wrote in the majority ruling from the all-Republican court. Did you hear that? All-Republican court. Quote, unborn children are children without exception based on developmental stage, physical location, or any other ancillary characteristics. Unquote. He said the court had previously ruled that fetuses killed while a woman is pregnant are covered under Alabama's wrongful death of a minor act, and noting, nothing excludes extrauterine children from the act's coverage. Now, you were just talking about these embryos being frozen. I understand they could be frozen for, say, what, 20 years, and then thawed and used, and successfully. That so does that mean when that kid is born, he's his age is 20 years and 9 months, and he can go out and buy a gun or start drinking liquor because he's already 21 years old? Or if he gets legal representation, he could end up being born with a $250,000 legal bill hanging over his head for some reason?
He could be drafted.
Yeah, it's just ridiculous. The ruling brought a rush of warnings about the potential impact on fertility treatments and the freezing of embryos, which had previously been considered property by the courts. The National Infertility Association says, quote, this ruling is stating that a fertilized egg, which is a clump of cells, is now a person. It really puts into question the practice of in vitro fertilization, unquote. They called the decision a terrifying development for the 1 in 6 people impacted by infertility who need in vitro fertilization. 1 in 6. I had no idea. I would have thought it would be 1 in 50.
All of this, of course, is wrapped up with the fact that the Supreme Court has overturned Roe v. Wade. And it sort of is a mixture of the abortion question. Is abortion a religious question, or is it a legal matter? And it's a mixing, a blending of the two to the detriment of both, of course. But religion has always felt that it owns your body.
You're right. Yeah.
I have a couple of good examples here, if I may. Timothy Dwight, who was the 8th president of Yale University, opposed smallpox vaccination as being against God's will. He said, "If God had decreed from all eternity that a certain person should die of smallpox, it would be a frightful sin to avoid and annul the decree by the trick of vaccination."
Wow.
So if God wants you to die from smallpox, it's up to you. You have an obligation to do so. Worse than that, in 1591, two women, a midwife and her patient, were burned at the stake alive on the grounds of Edinburgh Castle in Scotland for having eased the pain of childbirth, which when God threw Eve out of the Garden of Eden, said that all women would suffer pain in childbirth. And they were burned alive for attempting to to avoid or in some way vacate God's will by avoiding the pain of childbirth. So those are just two examples of why of how religion thinks it owns your body, and why it's just a small step for the state of Alabama to tell you what to do with your embryos too. That's nothing compared to being burned alive.
It's just fascinating that they assert that they're the party of freedom when it's clear they're the party of oppression based on their religion. And I'm not just making that up. Let's back up a little bit here and talk about how this whole thing started. The plaintiffs in the Alabama case had undergone IVF treatments that led to the creation of several embryos, some of which were implanted and resulted in healthy births, okay? The couples had paid to keep others frozen in a storage facility at the Mobile Infirmary Medical Center. In 2020, 4 years ago, a patient wandered into the area and removed several embryos, dropping them on the floor and, quote, killing them, unquote, the ruling said. That's what the court said. You killed these people. And the judges ruled that wrongful death lawsuits by the couples could proceed. This is incomprehensible. These things, you can't see them with the naked eye. And they're calling them people.
Did they drop them on purpose?
I don't know. But this is what's so astonishing. Chief Justice Tom Parker, he's the chief judge of the Alabama Supreme Court, issued a concurring opinion that quoted the Bible as he discussed the meaning of the phrase, quote, the sanctity of unborn life, quote, in the Alabama Constitution. Here's what he said. Even before birth, all human beings bear the image of God, and their lives cannot be destroyed without effacing his glory. Now, he should be removed today from that bench because he doesn't understand that in America, the Bible is never the basis or never should be the basis of any legal opinion. It is simply somebody's religion that they can take or leave. Which, as you say, if you don't believe in abortion, don't have one. But your religious ideology that says, I can't have one, of course I can't, I'm a male, but anybody else can't, should never be imposed on anybody. And because our government is structured as a secular government, it always has been. It was the very first thought they had when they started to form the Bill of Rights. Congress will make no law respecting an establishment of religion.
And 10 seconds later, movement to make the U.S. a Christian nation began, and it's been going on ever since. The New York Times described the Alabama decision as a good example of our slide towards theocracy. And of course, it'd be great if the U.S. was a theocracy. Religion produces nothing, therefore it has to belly up to the trough, and we have the biggest trough of all in the U.S.
Yeah. Let me read what Judge Greg Cook said. He filed the only full dissent to the majority opinion, and he's a Republican, so he understands what law is and that it's not deference to the Bible. He said the 1872 law, which is a law that was involved in all of this, did not define a minor child and was being stretched from the original intent to cover frozen embryos. He wrote this, "Moreover, there are other significant reasons to be concerned about the main opinion's holding. No court anywhere in the country has reached the conclusion the main opinion reaches." And he added that the ruling almost certainly ends the creation of frozen embryos through in vitro fertilization in Alabama. And just this morning, it was yesterday afternoon, I was watching one of the news programs where a physician in Alabama was being interviewed, and she says, "We have simply stopped this procedure entirely because we don't know if we can be charged with murder one for anything that's involved with this, with the production or storage or the disposal of these embryos." I imagine what they're going to do is take all the existing embryos to a free state like California or New York to get rid of them so they don't get pinched on a murder one rap. What else can they do? That's what I'd do. And then shut down the in vitro fertilization. Now we got a situation where we need more young people to keep Social Security running. We don't want immigrants coming in. We don't want women to be able to have these kids. And the birth rate in Alabama is going to noticeably and discernibly drop now as a result of this.
The Bible has a prescription of how to mix up a potion from the dirt on the floor of the synagogue make a woman drink it in order to induce an abortion. And it also has many examples of people killing children. I think Elijah was on his way up to Nineveh. The children called him bald head, and he cursed them in the name of God, and two bears came out of the woods and tore 42 of them to pieces or something of that effect. So the Bible's full of examples of God himself killing not just embryos or preborn children, but living children. So, if you want to cite religion, of course, you can prove anything moral, ethical, either point of view by way of the Bible. So the Bible's pretty clear. They're in favor of abortion, and they're in favor of killing living children if they drink too much or if they sass their parents.
And all of this oppression can be traced right back to Donald Trump and his picks for the Supreme Court, who stood in front of their Senate hearing committees and openly lied about Roe being established law, because they knew damn good and well they had been picked for the sole purpose of overturning it. They did it. And now if they think the voters are going to forget this when November comes around, they are as delusional as they are oppressive. This issue is not going to go away. It's getting worse. And the Americans, even Americans like you and me who aren't involved in this because we're too old to have kids, and we aren't running around with 20-year-old women, right, are still going to understand how oppressive this is and how this trend needs to be not reinforced but reversed. And the place to do it is at the voting booth. Joe, we got to take a short break here. Joe Reinhardt with Ed Golly on The Voice of Reason. We're going to pause for a few moments to talk about some of the other programs here on the TAN Talk Radio Network. And when we return, more of the issues that conservatives never want you to hear about.
Hey, you new to the area or just want to know about the best hidden gems and upcoming events? Stay tuned. Be Local Buzz with Devin takes you to these places, introduces you to the best businesses, and tells you about upcoming buzz. Preset your radio to TAN Talk 1340 AM or 106.1 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. That is the Be Local Buzz with Devin on TAN Talk 1340 AM and 106 FM every Thursday from 4 to 5. Looking forward to speaking with you.
Tune in to the Shrink and Wrap Show here on TAN Talk Radio. Our stories and our topics will include but are not limited to everyday issues. We're here for you, for our listeners. We want to know what's important to you. So again, don't miss us on TAN Talk Radio. Tune in again. Shrink and Wrap Show. We'll see you then.
That's the Shrink and Wrap Show, every Thursday from 3 to 4 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network.
If you'd like to comment on the program by email, you're welcome to do so. Our email address is WTANvoice@AOL.com. That's all one word. WTANvoice@AOL.com. We'd love to hear from you. And I want to quickly go to our poll watch, where we take a look at some of the numbers affecting our culture today. 47% of Americans say they are very satisfied with how their own lives are going, but it's close to the record low recorded in 2011. 31% somewhat satisfied, 11% somewhat dissatisfied, and 9% very dissatisfied. Satisfaction has risen 5 points among Democrats over the past year, but has dropped 10 points among Republicans and 4 points for independents. That, of course, is something else that'll be remembered at the voting booth. But we're going to talk briefly a little bit later in the program about what the status of the economy is in our country today. I want to go back in and about 2 weeks ago to talk about what Tommy Tuberville, who's a United States Senator representing Alabama but doesn't live in Alabama, lives in the Florida Panhandle, said about how he thinks the United States government should address the now two-year-old war that's going on in Ukraine.
But we forced this issue. We kept forcing NATO all the way to Eastern Europe, and Putin just got tired of it. He said, listen, I do not want missiles on my border from the United States of America. It'd be like Russia coming to Mexico and putting missiles in Mexico. I understand what he's talking about. You can tell Putin's on top of his game. One thing he said that it really rung a bell is the propaganda media machine over here. They sell anything they possibly can to go after Russia. They can't win. It's not going to happen. Somebody needs to negotiate. Donald Trump will have it over with in a matter of weeks.
And how do you think he'll end that, Joe? Or would if he becomes president?
I'm sure that he'll end it by doing whatever Putin tells him to do.
But the point of that is, fundamentally, he's saying we should get out and just let Ukraine be taken over by Russia. Now let me take you back to January 20th, 1961, to hear what a Democrat said about how our country should stand in the world with respect to the defense of liberty.
Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty.
And even Ronald Reagan, I think, adopted that position. He was an avid anti-communist, and the whole Republican Party back in the days of McCain and Reagan would have stood up to Putin and any advances he made in Eastern Europe, and would have stood firmly with NATO and not sit around and ask them if they paid their dues, which they don't even pay dues, as it turns out. Now, if you're a voter, I would submit to you that the values and the position of the Democratic Party has remained unchanged ever since John Kennedy spoke those words at his inauguration in 1961. What is the position of the Republican Party as expressed by Tommy Tuberville? You're a voter. You decide which direction this country takes with respect to the defense of liberty. Lisa Jarvis in Bloomberg questions this. How did we let this happen, she says. Only 15% of Americans think abortion should be illegal in cases of rape. So that means 85% of Americans think if some poor woman gets raped and she wants to terminate that pregnancy, she should have the right to do it. 85% of us think that. And yet a new study estimates that rapes have led to almost 65,000 forced pregnancies in the 14 states that enacted total abortion bans after the Supreme Court overturned Roe. That's the seating capacity of Tampa Stadium, isn't it, Ed? About 65,000? So there you go. Imagine that whole stadium full of women, and that's how many they estimate have had forced pregnancies in just that time since we've had the Dobbs decision. She says the number is, to be clear, an estimate because of the stigma that keeps 2 out of 3 survivors from even reporting their assaults. But despite a public perception that rape-related pregnancy is rare, previous research has found that about 2.9 million American women have had one in their lifetime, often as the result of a sexual assault by someone they know. In red states, many black and Hispanic women and teenagers simply can't afford to go out of state for abortions and now know they and their families face prosecution if they get one in secret. It's certainly going to happen in Alabama, Mississippi. All the flyover states are trying their hardest to impose the harshest oppression on the women of their states. Between April and December of 2022, Texas alone registered 9,800 additional births. Traumatized women who are forced to give birth to their rapist's child suffer major physical, mental, and socioeconomic consequences, a re-traumatization by the state. These forced pregnancies are post-Roe America's national shame. How can you argue with that, right? It's just unbelievable what they're doing to women in this country. And they just shrug it off and say, well, this is what this God wants. Well, you know, you've never had a conversation with a God. I never have. Nobody in the world has, right? Somehow these gods never will talk to us, literally. But these people claim that they know what the God wants, and what the God wants is oppression. This is exactly why we have a secular government, to protect us from that, and they're doing it every chance they have. Fortunately, people in 7 states have already taken the initiative to introduce amendments to their state's constitutions to protect their liberties over the most stringent efforts by the conservatives and the Republicans to stop them from doing it. And they've still done it, and now we have our chance here in Florida, because that amendment's probably going to be on the ballot. I think the Supreme Court will not accept the twisted logic of our Attorney General, and they will allow it on the ballot. Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito is one of the triumvirate of Christian mobsters on the court. He attempted an I told you so on Tuesday when he criticized a judge's dismissal of potential jurors in a workplace discrimination case because they believed homosexuality is a sin. You know, the whole institution of sin is just a fabrication of religion. Right? In the real world,
it doesn't really... invented crime.
Exactly. Alito said that that's exactly the type of outcome he warned against when the Supreme Court ruled in 2015 against his objections that the Constitution guarantees a right to same-sex marriage. And he said, I don't know if he was on the court then, I'm not sure if he was there in 2015, but he said he'd anticipated that Americans would be labeled as bigots unless they hid their traditional religious beliefs about homosexual conduct.
Because those beliefs are bigoted.
They are, exactly. And he criticized this trial judge's decision to reject some jurors because of their religious beliefs. He wrote this: when a court, a quintessential state actor, finds that a person is ineligible to serve on a jury because of his or her religious beliefs, that decision implicates fundamental rights. Well, the Missouri Court of Appeals said the question asked of jurors appropriately focused on whether they had strong feelings about homosexuality, because the plaintiff in this case they were dealing with, her sexual orientation was at the heart of her claim that she'd been harassed and mistreated. And so the court was essentially asking people, are you bigoted against homosexuals? Will that affect the way that you decide the case? And rightfully dismissed them from jury duty.
They will dismiss you from jury duty in a capital offense case if you're opposed to the death penalty.
Exactly.
Which many people are for religious reasons.
The appeals court said that the Missouri Department of Corrections didn't raise objections during the trial to dismissing potential jurors, so now they can't do it in hindsight. So they agreed with it, and they were the ones being sued. That's also the reason Alito said he reluctantly agreed that the correction department's appeal should be denied. So he based it not on the selection of jurors, but on the fact that the defendants, which was the Missouri Department of Corrections, didn't object to it. So he figured he had no foundation to overrule it. But still, 13 states had urged the Supreme Court, to take the case to protect jurors from religious discrimination in the jury box. Well, you know, any kind of discrimination is supposed to be weeded out in the juror selection process, and he's turning around saying, oh, heck no, let's go ahead and do it anyway. Now, let's see. Let's talk about the breaking news, Joe, of the day, which is that House Judiciary Committee Chair Jim Jordan, a Republican from Ohio, is brushing aside the indictment of the FBI informant at the center of the GOP's allegations against President Biden, arguing that the source's arrest, quote, doesn't change the fundamental facts, unquote, of the Republican case against the president. This is just astonishing. The guy came out and said, yeah, I'm lying. I'm getting all this information from the Russian intelligence agencies. And Jordan is saying that doesn't change the facts. The facts, in his mind, are the lies. I guess alternative facts are surviving, aren't they? Yesterday, nearly a week after this guy's arrest, Alexander Smirnov, Jordan downplayed the significance of Smirnov's claim that they play in the conference's impeachment inquiry into Biden. So Smirnov last week was arrested on allegations that he made up information involving the Bidens, including his claim that the then vice president and his son Hunter each accepted a $5 million bribe, which is an assertion that is central to the GOP's impeachment inquiry against the president. Last year, Jordan said this: the impeachment offense is, I think, the key thing is Burisma, unquote. So it's like he's saying this is really the core of the case against Biden, which was involving monies that they took from it. They claim that Hunter Biden was on the board but unqualified. Well, I guess they think that the board members go out and start slamming drills into the ground and wrapping chains around them. No, they don't. That's not what people on the board of directors do. They don't even need to know how oil is drilled. Just the same as when Nikki Haley was on the board of Boeing. She probably couldn't fold up a piece of paper and fly it across the room. Why is she on the board? She doesn't know anything about building airplanes. And the answer is there are other reasons that they're on the board, which is to expand the business, not to go out and actually physically drill the oil or figure out where to drill or any of that stuff. But the conservatives don't get that. Jordan says it is what it is. That applies to everything, doesn't it? A door over there is what it is. It's a door. What does that mean? It doesn't tell you anything. The Judiciary Committee chair went on to list a number of long-running GOP claims involving Hunter Biden and his involvement with Ukrainian energy company Burisma. And Jordan said those facts, they don't change regardless of what this confidential human source is saying. So he's really coming right out and saying, even if we know everything is a lie, we're still going to presume they're facts and try to impeach the president based on what we know are established as lies. This is how desperate these people are to get Biden impeached. They don't care whether they have a case or not. They just want to get him impeached. Yesterday, Representative Jamie Raskin said the revelations involving Smirnoff destroy the entire case. He says Smirnoff was the foundation of the whole thing. He was the one who came forward to say that Burisma had given Joe Biden 5 million balloons, and that was just concocted out of thin air. The controversy surrounding Smirnoff depended on Tuesday after the Justice Department revealed in a filing that Smirnoff said he received his information about Hunter Biden from Russian intelligence. And this all this business about Joe Biden when he was the vice president insisted on firing the Ukrainian prosecutor because he was going after Burisma. Turns out it's totally false. He was never investigating Burisma in the first place.
Well, you know, they have to sort of make up for the impeachments, plural, of Donald Trump. An opportunity to be a jerk.
Yeah.
But the real reason, I think, is the Republican attempt to prove to the public at large that the Democrats are just as bad as they are. Mm. That's hardly a defense, and it's hardly, singing your own praises to say, oh, yeah, well, your brother was worse. Right?
Exactly. And another point I think that's relevant is the conservatives are asserting that Trump is being prosecuted strictly for political reasons, right? But when we look at what we've learned about him since all these prosecutions starts, we've learned that he raped E. Jean Carroll in a department store's dressing room. We've learned that he and his family committed one of the largest financial frauds in American history. He led an insurrection against the United States, trying to end American democracy for all time. He stole America's secrets, lied to the FBI about it, and shared these secrets with others. He was caught red-handed with the documents at Mar-a-Lago, insisting he didn't have them. He refused to give them back. He directed people on his staff to hide them, and the FBI finally had to raid him and found all the documents. They caught him red-handed. And he and his family have corruptly taken more money from foreign governments while in and running for office than any family in American history. And more than any other person in America, Trump is responsible for ending Roe and taking away the rights and freedoms of more than half the population. And of course, he's committed to side with Putin and end the Western alliance.
I'm confident that all 90 plus of the various lawsuits, indictments, and alleged criminal offenses that Trump is facing at this time are all just political retribution, and they're just bogus.
And they're saying, oh, this is only Biden is...
All of them.
Biden's directing this against Trump, but Biden's being investigated too. And now we see that even when we see that the facts are clearly bogus and they're all lies, what does Jim Jordan and Comer say? We're going to keep prosecuting him anyway. Now, that's what I call persecution. The evidence against Trump in every case, in every one of those 91 felonies that he's being charged with, has been presented to a grand jury. And they made the decision to indict him. Not Biden, not the attorneys general, not Jack Smith or Fannie Willis, the facts were presented to the grand juries, and the grand juries were not selected by Biden. They weren't handpicked grand juries. They were people who independently serve on those juries, heard the evidence, and decided, yes, there is enough evidence to indict this guy. Now, if you took all the lies that this mole said to a grand jury and said, now these are all lies, do you want to hand down an indictment, what do you think the grand jury would say?
Hopefully.
Jump in the lake.
Hopefully,
right?
No.
Yes. No, they wouldn't hand down an indictment. And yet these guys won't stand down. and they won't admit they're wrong. They're demonstrating total fealty to Trump.
Well, politicians are not unlike religions, you know. Took the Catholic Church 300-500 years to admit that Galileo was right and they were wrong.
Exactly.
They're cut from the same cloth.
They sure are. And I really think that the voters are going to remember this, because the issue of the economy, even though voters still think it's bad, the fact is that the U.S. has the best economic recovery from COVID in the G7. Our stock market is breaking records, which helps all those 401ks. Our gross domestic product grew by 4.1% over the past two quarters and has grown on average almost 3% in Biden's presidency, which is three times higher than Trump averaged over his 4 years. Now, remember, Trump said he'd give us 5% economic growth or GDP growth and never did. Said he could give us 10%, but it'd be too... He didn't know anything about how to generate growth. He thinks it's by putting tariffs on Chinese imports. All that does is pass the tariff on to the consumer and cause inflation. Makes things more expensive. We have the lowest unemployment rate in peacetime economy since the Second World War. Jobs are more plentiful today than any time since the 1960s. Eight times as many Biden jobs in 36 months as the last three GOP presidents combined over 16 years. Inflation has fallen dramatically. It's the lowest of all the G7 countries. Prices of mortgage, rents, and a lot of food items are actually coming down. And wealth is up 37% from 2020 to 2022. Median wealth for 18 to 34-year-olds in this period has more than doubled. How do we then conclude that we have a bad economy? I don't get it. Where is it? Domestic energy production of all kinds, whether it's oil, gas, or renewables, is setting records, leaving America far more energy independent than it's been in decades. And Biden's big investment agenda is creating opportunities for American workers and prosperity for the country for decades to come. We're actually putting our bridges back together instead of waiting for them to fall down. I mean, we are building infrastructure. We're building the computer chips that we need. And, you know, we're still building cars. We're still manufacturing steel. We're still, and of course, all the military weapons that we produce, and almost all of the money that is committed to Ukraine actually stays here in this country, manufacturing the weapons and munitions that we send over there. I mean, if we give $61 billion to Ukraine, they don't just put $61 billion in cash, fly it over there, unload it at the airport, and we never see the money again. It's used to manufacture weapons right here in this country and sent over there and destroyed, which is the best economic stimulus you can have, right? You use it, you destroy it, then you got to build it again. It's not like guys like me who will drive a car for 10 years, right? The auto industry hates me. They want the guy that buys a new car every 2 years, no matter what.
Planned obsolescence.
Yeah. So, and for young people, it's the best job market since the 1960s. So, the economy is actually doing well, all things considered. Biden didn't create the inflation. I've heard experts, economic experts, come right out and say you can't pin any of that on him. It's all because of the COVID. And we're seeing the best recovery of all the G7 nations. So we're doing pretty well. And I think that's the message that he's going to need to dwell on come election time.
All about the money.
Joe, our quote today is from Zsa Zsa Gabor, and I'll bet you know what it is. She says, "I am a marvelous housekeeper. Every time I leave a man, I keep his house." Tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., join Paul Molloy for Freedom Works. Up next, we'll check in with national news and then a Joy on Paper with Patsy with a Z. Hope you'll join us again next Thursday for another edition of The Voice of Reason. And now on with Joe Reinhart, I'm Ed Golly, reminding you, if the statement seems a little too implausible to be true, don't believe it because a conservative said it.
Make them prove it.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3